Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the second in our three-part series exploring what I would say are the almost philosophical, theological ramifications of the absence of the shofar from Rosh Hashanah when Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbat. I mentioned this kind of at length at the beginning of last week, and you can listen on Why You Torah to the first shir. You don't need to have listened to that first shir to appreciate what we will talk about tonight, but I did discuss at length how jarring and striking and shocking it is that despite the fact that Rosh Hashanah effectively has one mitzvah object, one fundamental mitzvah you do, we just don't do it when Shabbat coincides with Rosh Hashanah. And we learn this, and I'm already going to share the source sheet at this point. We learn this very simply from the Mishnah itself. The Mishnah tells us, source number one on the source sheet, Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechal Liot B'Shabbat, when Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbat, B'Migdash Hayu Tokin, in the Beit HaMikdash they would blow shofar, on Shabbat, aval la bamedina, but not in the rest of the country. We're not going to unpack this Mishnah to any degree other than understanding it as a fundamental, if unclear, halacha of Rosh Hashanah, right? When Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbat, there is no shofar. And what we spoke about last week, and I want to redraw your attention to this week, though this time we'll look at the sources a lot quicker and we'll skip a lot of the details, are the contrasting reasons offered by the Gemara, the Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, versus the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, as to why this is. One answer is probably very well known, but the other answer is not as well known. But the Gemara itself says, commenting on the Mishnah, Minahani Mili, from where are these laws derived? And there's a whole lengthy discussion, yada, yada, yada. But fundamentally, this discussion concludes with a different answer, Ella Amar Rava. Rava comes along to suggest, or to explain, Mid the Oraita Mishrei Shari. No, on a biblical level, because this is one of the fundamental questions the Gemara is grappling with. How can the Torah forbid the blowing of shofar on Shabbat? And so Rava says, no, the Torah actually doesn't think you don't blow shofar on Shabbos. The Torah thinks it's actually permitted to blow shofar on Shabbos. The Rabbanan who, the Gzorbe Kedarabba, but it was the Rabbanan, it was the rabbis, the sages, who prohibited the blowing of the shofar in accordance with the opinion of Rabba. The Amar Rabba, for Rabba said, Hakol Chayavim B'tkiat Shofar, everyone is obligated to blow the shofar. Ve'en Hakol B'kiin B'tkiat Shofar. The problem is, everyone might be obligated to blow the shofar. The problem is, not everyone knows how to blow shofar. We solve this problem nowadays by listening to someone else blow it. But Rabba pointed out, this created a problem. Therefore, Gezeira Shema Yitlenu Biyado, we want to avoid someone would pick up the shofar in their hand, Ve'yelech Eitzal Habaki Lelamad, and go to a shofar expert, or go to someone who knows what they are doing to teach them how to blow shofar, Ve'yavirenu Arba Amot Bereshut Harabim, and therefore they would walk. They would walk in a public thoroughfare, there is no Erev, they would break Shabbat by carrying the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and therefore for that reason, the Rabbanan instituted the Gezerah, a decree, that you don't blow shofar on Shabbos in order to prevent these circumstances. And then the Gemara concludes, V'hainu taima de lulav, V'hainu taima de megillah. This is the same reason we don't wave Arba Aminim on Sukkot. And it's the same reason that, even though I spoke about this last week, we rig our calendar to never have Purim coincide with Shabbat. Ostensibly, we're Purim and Shabbat to coincide, which can happen in Yerushalayim when they celebrate Purim a day later, right? You also can't read Megillah then for the same reason. Per the Bavli, the explanation of why we don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah has not much to do with Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah per se. It's all about this gezeira to avoid carrying. In contrast, the Yerushalmi, and again, we're only going to read a sliver of the Yerushalmi tonight, but we looked at it again last week. We read it in more detail. So the Yerushalmi presents this whole thing as a conversation between different Rabbanim, right? They're trying to understand this, they're trying to understand this Mishnah, and eventually they approach Rav Kahana in order to kind of settle the dispute, why don't we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? And Rav Kahana answers source number three, Amar Lon Katuv Echad Omer Yom Teruah. In one verse describing Rosh Hashanah in the Torah, it describes Rosh Hashanah as a Yom Teruah, a day of shofar blasts. V'chatov acher omer zichron teruah. While in another verse, it says it's a zichron. We spoke about this last week, but zichron we will translate simply as a remembrance of shofar blasts. Haketzad, how can the Torah describe Rosh Hashanah as two different words? Day of shofar, remembrance of shofar. B'shashehu chal b'chol. When your Rosh Hashanah falls during the week, Yom Teruah, it's literally a day where we blow the shofar. B'shasha huchal b'shabbat, but on a day when Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbat, Zichron Teruah, it's a remembrance of Teruah. Mazkirin, we recall the fact, we make note of the fact that we do blow the shofar of our lo tokin, however, we don't blow the shofar itself. That's the Yerushalmi versus the Bavli. And I spoke at length last week about the fundamental conceptual distinction between these two explanations. For the Yerushalmi, right, Rosh Hashanah and Shabbat, or the Shofar and Shabbat, are fundamentally incompatible with one another, right? When Rosh Hashanah and Shabbat coincide, per the Yerushalmi, woven into the very fabric of the Torah's framing of Rosh Hashanah must just be about something else. And we spoke last week about trying to already find one theme to focus on, actually completely different theme of our relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, our relationship with God, to focus on when Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbat. In contrast, per the Bavli, for the Gemara itself, there's nothing inherently incompatible with Shofar and Shabbat, but we just have this decree, we want to prevent the violation of Shabbat, and therefore Shabbat triumphs over Rosh Hashanah, triumphs over Shofar. It's hence the title, when Shabbat subdues the Shofar, but it doesn't actually fundamentally create a different Rosh Hashanah. For the Yerushalmi, when Rosh Hashanah and Shabbat coincide, it's almost a different Rosh Hashanah because there is no shofar. It's Zichron Teruah. It's a completely different kind of festival, almost. Whereas for the Bavli, it, as we saw last week, rejects this Yom Teruah, Zichron Teruah distinction. It's not such a big fan of it. What I want to do today is focus on a really, really interesting perspective that emerges from the tension between these two explanations for why we don't blow shofar. And it is found, it's an explanation offered by Rabbi Herschel Schechter, one of the most prominent of the Rosh Yeshiva of YU, and it's an absolutely fascinating perspective that's going to take us on a whirlwind tour of not only a deeper understanding of the purpose of shofar normally, but also one of the most interesting but strange laws of Shabbat. For Rav Schechter, this entire debate between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi on why we don't blow shofar on Shabbat has a parallel. There is another law, another debate within the Gemarot that the Yerushalmi and Bavli disagree, and Rav Schechter thinks it's essentially the same argument happening. What is that argument? It is the argument over bakashot, personal requests in prayer on Shabbat. To understand what I mean, let's first take a look at source number 4, the Gemara in Masechet Brachot. And for our purpose, the most important situation, and I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I hate to admit it, happens to me quite a bit. Right? The first case we're going to see is not something that happens to me very often. I'm davening and then I'm like, I already davened earlier today. That's not a problem I face. But sometimes on a Friday evening in particular, I am on autopilot davening the Amidah. This is why you should always daven from a Siddur, but sometimes I'm not actually davening from a Siddur. I tell myself I'm going to have Kavana and I close my eyes and I start davening. And then the second I tell my, that's how the Yetzer Hara gets me. Then I close my eyes, I start davening. And before you know it, I got distracted by something. I'm on autopilot and I realize I'm halfway through the weekday Amidah. Right. And these kinds of two different scenarios are the concern of the Gemara here in Brachot. Va'amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Haya omeid b'tfila. You are davening. Remember, tfila is the Amidah. You're saying the Amidah. V'nizkar shehit palel. And you all of a sudden realize, I already davened mincha. Right? You're in the... What do you do? pulsate. You stop right then and there. Don't go any further. Don't do it. Don't do anything. Va'afilu be'emtza bracha. This is actually astonishing. Even if you are in the middle of the bracha, right? You're halfway through atachonin when you realize you've already davened mincha. You don't bother finishing. You just stop right there. You don't even finish the bracha itself, right? You just get up. You move on. Boom. You forget it all happened and you never share it with anyone because you don't want to have to tell that to people. The Gemara is astonished by this halacha. Eini? Right? Really? Can that be? V'ha'amar Rav Nachman. Because let's hear this case which seems to conflict with what you just said. Ki havinan be Rabba bar Avuha. Right? When we were in the school of Rabba bar Avuha, we asked the following question. Hane b'nei be Rav. Those who are in the school of Rav. The ta'u umadkari d'chol b'shabbat. And they are accidentally saying the weekday Amidah when it should be already, when it's already Shabbat, right? Again, this happens to me. Mahu sheyigmaru. What do they do, right? Do you continue the bracha or do you stop? And he answers, Va'amarlan gomrim kol ota bracha, right? You complete the whole bracha. So this is actually, interestingly, this is practical halacha as far as I'm aware, right? If it's Friday evening, and I once got all the way to Barich Aleinu before I realized, I think that's what got me, because I'm like, why am I davening? It's Shabbos. Why am I davening for like financial health? You don't do this on Shabbos, something we're about to talk about. And I was just like, I've been saying the weekday Amidah for like a good chunk of brachot at this point. What do? You finish the end of the bracha. Right, says the Gemara in Masechet Brachot, right? You finish the end until the end of that bracha, and then you switch to Shabbos davening. The Gemara here, essentially, has brought two different conflicting opinions, right? One, it says, if you've already davened the Amidah, you just stop, you don't conclude the bracha. And the second is, if you're davening the wrong Amidah, right, you continue and complete the bracha. The debate per se need not bother us, but the conclusion of the Gemara is what's important for us. Hachi hashta, how on earth can you compare these two cases, right? The Gemara is upset that we can even compare these two cases. Hatam gavra bar chiyuvahu, right? When we are talking about when you daven on Shabbat and you accidentally say the weekday Amidah, you're still obligated in the Amidah. V'rabanan hu delo atrachu mishum kvod Shabbat. Aval hacha hat salile. When it comes to the weekday Amidah, says the Bavli, technically you should say the weekday Amidah even on Shabbat, right? All of the various requests, all of the various details of all of those middle brachot of the Amidah, according to the Gemara here, technically you should still say them, but Chazal decreed you don't. Because it's a tircha, because it's too long. Shabbos, we don't want to spend all of, it's an interesting perspective not to delve into too much, but basically we don't want to spend all of Shabbos saying all of these brachot, and therefore Chazal just cut out a ton of the brachot from the Amidah. But fundamentally, right, and then the conclusion of the Gemara here is the guy who, you know, realized he was in the middle of his Amidah and he'd already davened it, right, he'd already davened, he doesn't even have an obligation. But the point here to extract for us is, according to the Bavli, on Shabbat, you theoretically should say the weekday Amidah. There's just another value that changes that fact. Tircha. We don't want to burden people too much, and therefore you don't. In contrast, take a look at the Yerushalmi. Tane, it was stated, Asor lidvoa tzrachav b'Shabbat. It is prohibited to ask for one's needs on Shabbat. Rabbi Zu'ura Shal L'Rabbi Chia Barba, right? Mahu Meima Re'inu Parnasenu. What about things like in benching when we say, I spoke about this on Friday night, a side point to all of this, and I had mentioned on Friday night how I was going to be talking tonight about this topic in more detail. What about in benching? Benching is chock full of requests already. Amar Le Tovos Brachot Kachain. Right, we don't actually alter the form of brachot if they do come with requests. Benching is chock full of personal requests, but we still bench because that is the fundamental form of benching. But the Yerushalmi says it is prohibited to pray for your needs on Shabbat. You cannot make bakashot. There is an explicit prohibition to doing so. In order to understand why this is, just very quickly take a look at sources 5a and 5b. The Korban Ha'edah, who's Rabbi David Frankel, who lived in the 1700s, German rabbi, one of the most influential commentators on the Yerushalmi. He says, commenting on Asol Itzbo Atzarachav B'Shabbat, it's forbidden to ask for your needs on Shabbat. Lefi Shemichlal Oneg Shabbat Hu, because part of the whole notion of Oneg Shabbat, of enjoying Shabbat, Sheyachshuv Ha'adam Ki'ilu Kol Melachto Asoy. Right, this is the most wonderful, ambitious statement I have ever read. If only this was true. If you are someone who is able to do this, by the way, yasher koach, well done. But really, what should you be doing on Shabbat? What's part of your oneg Shabbat? You sit on Shabbat and you're like, I did all my work of last week. Nothing to worry about right now. I don't think I've ever met a person who actually on Shabbat is not so stressed about the work to do the following week. But says the Korban Ha'edah, that's really what you should be doing. You should be thinking every single Shabbat, I'm done with all of my work. I don't have anything to do. V'hashoel, maybe we should start the tradition of just mass deleting all our emails on a Friday afternoon. And that way it's just, there is nothing to answer starting Sunday, starting Monday. V'hashoel tzarachav hu. But if you're going to start asking God for all of these needs on Shabbat, well, it creates the opposite. It's going to also bring sorrow to your heart. If you are sat there on Shabbat, right? On Shabbat, you're supposed to not be burdened by the work you have to do. But if instead you're sat there on Shabbat, davening for your parnasa, davening for this, davening for that, and you're going through the laundry list of all the things bothering you in the week, right? A, you're going to start to feel stressed and you're not going to enjoy Shabbat. And B, you're not having this mentality that, oh, I've already finished everything. So one explanation as to why the Yerushalmi prohibits requests on Shabbat is essentially to create a certain mentality within a person on Shabbat itself. In contrast, the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, the great medieval commentator, commenting on the, and I already realized I made a typo in the translation, it's 113b, not 112, but commenting on the following statement. So just to kind of a little bit of backstory to understand the Ran's commentary here. So I have mentioned before the Rif, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi. I also mentioned him last week because famously he blew shofar on Shabbat, but that's another story for another time. But what the Rif did when writing his commentary was he went through the Gemara and he only copied those things he thought were halachically binding. And so in his Masechet Shabbat, he writes the following comment, which is a comment from the Gemara in Shabbat itself, commenting on a verse of Isaiah, V'daber davar, shelo yehei diburcha shel Shabbat ki diburcha shel chol. There is actually a prohibition or an obligation on Shabbat, says the Gemara, to not make your speech, your conversations, on Shabbat, the same as your weekday conversations, right? The first thing the Ran does is he explains the comment of Rashi, which I put in the ellipses, but Rashi gives what I think is probably the most well-known explanation a lot of people have heard of, which is on Shabbat, you don't talk about business, right? You don't make business transactions and all these very, you know, all these kinds of specific economically related, you know, things, right? That is how Rashi explains the prohibition of Daber Davar. However, Ran explains it differently. Ela ikar haperush mufurash birushalmi. No, the true understanding of this prohibition is explained in the Yerushalmi. Lomar sha'afilu dabor ba'alma asor laharbot bo kederech umarbe b'chol. You shouldn't have the same kinds of conversations, just in general, the same extended conversations that you would during the week. The Garsinan Hatam, and we see asor lishol tzrachav b'shabbat. Right, it's forbidden to pray for one's needs on Shabbat. The Ran, crucially for our purposes, connects the prohibition from the Yerushalmi of asking for one's needs of Shabbat to the prohibition of V'daber Davar, having weekday conversations during the week. In other words, for the Ran, the prohibition is all about the unique spirit Shabbat is supposed to have in general, the spirit of Shabbat. For the Korban Ha'edah, the prohibition of requests on Shabbat is all about your own personal mentality. For the Ran, the prohibition of requests on Shabbat is all about the general atmosphere that's supposed to be inculcated on Shabbat as a whole. You're just not supposed to be focused on weekday things, personal needs, just anything that you would do on a weekday, you should not do on Shabbat. And even though the Shulchan Aruch never actually cites this prohibition, right? There is a general consensus, a generally accepted viewpoint, that it is prohibited to ask for personal needs on Shabbat. There are lots and lots of examples you may be able to point to where we seem to do so, right? Misha Berachs on Shabbat are very controversial for that reason. But generally speaking, right, we assume there is in some sense a prohibition of making requests on Shabbat per the Yerushalmi, whereas for the Bavli, there is no such request. There is no such prohibition. The Bavli doesn't think there's a problem with davening the Amidah during the week. The Yerushalmi does. What does all of this have to do with Shofar? Well, Rav Shachter points out two different Gemarot from Rosh Hashanah that speak of the purpose of Shofar. Atkein Rebbe, source number 6a. Atkein Rabbi Abahu Beketzari. So in Caesarea, the following shofar blasts were instituted. Tekiah, Shlosha Shevarim, Trua Tekiah. Right? The familiar, we're very familiar with this. However, the Gemara does not like this order of shofar blasts. And something I think we have to just a little bit of backstory that's probably important. The reason we blow both a Shevarim and a Teruah, and the reason we end up doing so many different convoluted patterns, is because everyone agrees the sound of a Tekiah is the sound of a Tekiah. Everyone disagrees about what the other sound should be. And so, therefore, we have the Teruah and the Shevarim are two different, essentially, interpretations of the same note, which is why on Rosh Hashanah, not on Shabbos, but on the second day, we'll do Tekiah, Shevarim, Trua Tekiah, we'll do a set of those, we'll do a set of Tekiah Shevarim Tekiah, and we'll do a set of Tekiah Trua Tekiah, right? And the reason we do all three sets is to basically cover our bases to ensure that we have definitely fulfilled the mitzvah of Shofar. But, so Rabbi Abahu instituted to kind of do all of them, do everything possible. The Gemara does not like this. Manafshach. And here is crucial. E Yalulei Yalil. If the purpose of a shofar blast of a trua, right? Because Chazal discussed what exactly is a trua, and they connected to all these various interesting words, right? If it is yalulei yalel, which is whimpering, labed tekiah trua tekiah. If it's just supposed to sound like a whimper, you would only need to do tekiah trua tekiah, right? If you think about what a trua is supposed to sound like, it's supposed to sound like crying. Right, these are all learned out from verses. If, on the other hand, the sound of a trua is supposed to be moaning, labeit tekiah shlosha shvarim utkiah, right? The shvarim is supposed to sound like groaning or moaning, right? That's the sound it's supposed to be making, right? Says the Gemara here, crucially, for our purposes, what is the sound of the shofar? It's supposed to sound like someone really, really upset. Really, really in pain. Additionally, the Gemara a little earlier says, "V'imru lefanai b'Rosh Hashanah malchuyot zichronot v'shofarot." We have the three core pillars of the Rosh Hashanah Amidah that recall God's kingship, remembrances, and shofar. Malchuyot k'dei shetamlichunu aleichem, so that we crown God. Zichronot k'dei sheyale zichronechem lefanai tova. We ask God to recall everything for the good, uvameh, with what? B'shofar. The shofar is, in some sense, supposed to convey our prayers to God by being crying and whimpering. What on earth is going on here? What is the relevance of the shofar to crying, to whimpering, to serving as some form of prayer? In a very, very powerful idea, Rav Soloveitchik explains the following. So I should just say, he begins by quoting the Likutei Torah. Likutei Torah is a Chabad Sefer. Rav Soloveitchik famously had a little bit of a love for Chabad and its Torah. And so he doesn't quote it a lot, but he does quote it sometimes. I actually did ask, or originally I was trying to track down this original response, the original text of Likutei Torah. And I sent Rabbi Sossova just a screenshot of Rav Soloveitchik's, you know, thing here. And I was like, do you have any idea where this may be? And he sent me back a photo of a lengthy paragraph from Likutei Torah. And I'm like, I do not know how to read Hasidus, right? Like, Hasidic writings are very, very difficult to read if you're not clued into how they are written. So he sends back the laughing emoji, and then he sends me back just like a line. And he's like, I think this might be it. And I'm like, thank you. I'll just quote Rav Soloveitchik. But Rav Soloveitchik says the following. The Likutei Torah says that shofar is not the intellectual response of the human being, but is the shriek and cry of the person. Rav Soloveitchik continues. There are two kinds of tefillah. Firstly, there is organized tefillah, which is preconceived and formulated, and in which man states his plight and petitions to God to respond to him. This is the tefillah represented by the Shmona Esrei. This involves the intellect and requires a clear analysis of what man needs and his realization that he is totally dependent on God to favor him. The other type of tefillah, and by the way, just before we go any further, I have quoted Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, a grandson of Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Lichtenstein, a son-in-law of Rav Soloveitchik. They all make this distinction, which, you know, at least was most popularized by Rav Soloveitchik. The other type of tefillah is the extemporaneous reaction to pain, represented by crying and shrieking. The release of instinctual reaction is not characteristic of humans, but of animals who instinctively howl in reaction to pain. However, man is not always great. Often he is stupid and arrogant. He has no time to compose a structured tefillah, and so reacts like an animal. He cries, shrieks, and exclaims his plight. Interestingly, when the Gemara discusses shofar, it speaks of groaning and crying and yalolei alel, shrieking. Bechia, crying, is unique to man. But yalolei, shrieking, is found by animals as well. A yalolei is an instinctual shriek with no tone, and which does not require intelligence. It is the reaction of the irrational animal to incapacity and pain. For Rav Soloveitchik, and it's one of his most powerful Rosh Hashanah ideas, the point of the shofar, and I've spoken about this before in other contexts, I think, is this almost primal expression of pain and prayer. Right? We turn to God with the shofar, right? And if we look at these Gemarot now of Rosh Hashanah, what is the shofar? It's supposed to be a wordless prayer, but fundamentally just an instinctive primal scream. Right? We stand on Rosh Hashanah, bereft of our failings for the past year, begging God. You know, we want to be better, help us, right? But at a certain point, we can't articulate that in words. So the shofar, this is the second Gemara 6b, the shofar kind of carries our prayers for us. Rav Soloveitchik, for the record, was very, very insistent, and it's not the dominant minhag in the Ashkenazi world, that you blow the shofar during the silent Amidah. It's a very frustrating practice, but probably correct. We don't do it. It's really, really frustrating if you've ever been. My previous shul did it, and it's kind of difficult, but there's actually a power to it too, because the silent Amidah is punctured by these wordless primal screams of the shofar, which really add an extra zip and oomph to the davening. But the shofar is fundamentally the purest form of prayer. Sa'aka, outcry, pain. Shofar is fundamentally a vehicle of primal prayer. And so, when we think back to the Bavli, and this is Rav Shechter's brilliant argument. When we think back to the Bavli and Yerushalmi about shofar on Shabbat, the Bavli doesn't actually think there's a problem blowing shofar on Shabbat. There's just another reason, like a really, really kind of bizarre reason, an important reason, but a bizarre reason why you don't. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with blowing shofar on Shabbat. Similarly, The Bavli doesn't think there's a problem with davening the weekday Amidah on Shabbat. There's just, again, there's a kind of a secondary reason why not to do so. The Bavli is unconcerned with either shofar on Shabbat and prayer on Shabbat. It thinks both are technically legitimate. In contrast, the Yerushalmi absolutely outlaws shofar on Shabbat and absolutely outlaws personal requests on Shabbat, and says Rav Shechter, these are not two different debates by the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, but it's the same debate with two different examples, right? Davening, weekday Amidah. Can you daven it or not? That's example one. Weekday Amidah is an obvious form of prayer, right? Tefillah, formal tefillah, as Rav Soloveitchik kind of describes it. Shofar is a different form of prayer, primal, instinctive, crying out prayer. The Bavli, totally cool with both of them, in theory, just has other reasons for not allowing them. Whereas in contrast, the Yerushalmi is completely against both of them because it's completely against prayer. The shofar is prayer. The shofar is tefillah in it's tza'aka, it's outcry in its most instinctive, purest form, and the Yerushalmi outlaws all prayers for personal needs on Shabbat. And so what I want to do for the rest of this evening is roll with this idea once again. Last week we rolled with the Yerushalmi. This week we're rolling with the Yerushalmi again. Please God, next week we'll actually look a little bit at the Bavli. But the reality is, and it kind of makes sense when you think about it from just a peek behind the curtain of a writing share perspective, the Bavli's justification for no shofar on Shabbat is really not that exciting, right? We don't want you to carry outside an Erev. Cool. But like the Yerushalmi, no, you can't blow shofar at all. Woven into the very fabric of the Torah's commands, there is no shofar whatsoever. Right? It's obviously much more captivating a reason. And so for Rav Shechter, it's because the shofar is prayer. And that's why it is prohibited. And therefore, if we accept this, what that also means is we have to reimagine what our Rosh Hashanah on the first day is supposed to be all about. I am, however, as I quickly glance at my notes, jumping the gun. Because first, all I want to illustrate is the fact that despite the fact that the Bavli does not ever mention this prohibition of prayer on Shabbat, and despite the fact that the Shulchan Aruch never codifies it, it is a pretty powerful belief within the Jewish world that you don't make prayers on Shabbat. It is worth noting, Rabbi Shlomo Kluger, who lived in he died in 1869, you know, he was the chief dayan of Brody, a very, very, very respected Rav of Jewish history. He really thinks fundamentally, right, there shouldn't be a problem with prayers on Shabbat, with requests on Shabbat. Source number 8, and I had to manually type this out from a text because it wasn't digitized. So I did like one sentence and then gave up because it was too much to type otherwise. But v'hadavar kamva, it's astonishing that we prohibit prayers. Dahari medina af b'shabbat haya muta lehitpalel yudchet rak d'lo atrachuhu rabbanan, right? Technically speaking, there should be no reason to prohibit it. So why are we getting so upset and so carried away, right? He thinks the Bavli and Yerushalmi are completely distinct. However, right, the shibole haleket, which is 13th century, a very, very influential halachic work, he reads the Bavli and the Yerushalmi together. Source number 9, Umishum kvod Shabbat hu delo atrechuhu rabbanan. That actually, what is the tircha? I explained earlier with the Bavli, the tircha is just, we don't want you to daven a longer Amidah. The Shibole Haleket explains the tircha as the issue brought by the Yerushalmi kvod Shabbat, right? He reads the two together. And practically speaking, even though the Shulchan Aruch does not codify this prohibition, we do see it impacting Rosh Hashanah davening in the Ramah. The Ramah says, source number 10, the Nohagin Lomar Avinu Malkeinu. Our practice is to say Avinu Malkeinu, Al Haseder, according to its correct order, V'im Hu Shabbat in Omrim Oto, but we don't say Avinu Malkeinu on Shabbat. The Mishnah Berurah explains in source 10a, Hata'am, what's the reason? She'ein sho'alin tzorachim b'Shabbat. We don't ask for our needs on Shabbat. Va'af k'shechal Rosh Hashanah be'erev Shabbat b'mincha. Even when Rosh Hashanah falls on a Friday, ein omrim avinu malkeinu at mincha. B'mincha ein omrim avinu malkeinu. We don't say avinu malkeinu even at mincha, right? Because it's close enough to Shabbat that we start to adopt certain Shabbat practices. Right? Fundamentally, we accept this somewhat binding nature of prohibiting personal requests on Shabbat. Even though the Bavli seems cool with it, we don't like it. For that reason, we don't do the weekday Amidah. For that reason, there's controversy over things like Misha Berech on Shabbat davening. And for that reason, argues Rav Shech, though, we don't blow shofar. Because shofar is prayer. It's the purest form of tza'aka, outcry we have. And we don't do that on Shabbat Rosh Hashanah. So the question then becomes, what should we be focused on Shabbat? And most importantly of all, not this coming Shabbat, but next Shabbat on Rosh Hashanah, what should we be thinking about? Because I would argue, right, it's not hard to enter Shabbat, right, without having too much thoughts of our, we can go a day, hopefully we're davening otherwise, right? So we don't need Shabbat to be turning to God with our personal requests. We have weekday davenings, but Rosh Hashanah, it's a little bit harder because I would wager I'm not the only person who kind of always enters Rosh Hashanah with almost a, not necessarily a laundry list of requests, but like, you know, things that are on my mind that I would like to take advantage of, particularly on Rosh Hashanah, and kind of, you know, have a little conversation with the Rabbono Shel Olam about. But on Shabbat, apparently I can't do this. I can't focus on my personal needs. What can I do instead? So here I want to share a few different perspectives that all orbit the same broad solution. And then reflect a little bit on what that means for our Rosh Hashanah. The first two sources are both found in the Mishnah Berurah. And he says the following. Katvu ha'acharonim. D'mutar lomar b'shabbat elokai ad shelo notzarti yihi ratzon v'chule. Right, so if you think about it for a second, right, now you're going to think about the fact that we can't make personal requests on Shabbat. So you're now going to mentally comb through the Amidah. And you're going to be like, okay, right, they are taken away from the Shabbat Amidah as a whole. But the final paragraph of the Amidah, right, we actually say Elokai Netzor. Interestingly, right, the Mishnah Berurah does not quote the passage of Elokai Netzor, but Elokai Ad Shelo Notzarti, which we actually reserve for Yom Kippur at the end of the Vidoy. Right? But the Gemara in Brachot, the very beginning, Daf Yud Zayin, already talks about the fact that these there are kind of different. There were lots of different competing concluding prayers to the Amidah. We say Elokai Netzor. One of the alternatives, which again, we only reserve for Yom Kippur, Elokai Ad Shelo Notzarti. Similar idea, right? You read Elokai Netzor and you realize it seems to be chock full of personal requests. The same with the Yehi Ratzon at the end, right? It seems to be a personal request. But the Mishnah Berurah says no, right? He quotes the Achronim, the rabbis who precede him, the great rabbis who precede him. These are fine to say. The Eino Aso She'elot Tzrachav, because you don't violate the prohibition of asking for your personal needs on Shabbat, Ella, unless, Kishema Vakesh Al Chole, or Parnosa or Domelo. Unless you are asking for healing, or financial strength, or things of that sort, She'esh Tza'ar Lefanav, which fundamentally bring pain. Right? If you think about it, right? If you are asking for someone's healing, you are, and again, I don't want to actually get into the merits of the psychological merits or otherwise of taking this kind of, you know, just forget about it for 24 hours mentality, but put that aside for now. Let's not open that Pandora's box. But fundamentally, says the Mishnah Berurah, the problem is reflecting on Shabbat on the things that are bothering you. If you are going to spend Shabbat worried about work, right? That's the problem. Aval. Charatat avonot. But if we're talking about the charata, the regret for your sins, which is Elokai Ad Shelo Notzarti, Tov Lomar B'chol Yom, It's not real. It's not real confession, but it's really good to do, right? There's nothing better than spending Shabbat. You know, Mishnah Berurah maybe here does not reveal himself to be the most cheerful company, but nothing better to spend Shabbat doing than reflecting on how awful a human being you've been that past week. But truth be told, another way of putting it would be, we shouldn't just be reserving Rosh Hashanah for Teshuvah, right? Shabbat is an Elokai Ad Shelo Notzarti. I will please God talk about this on Kol Nidrei night more. Elokai Ad Shelo Notzarti is a really, really powerful and but like existential crisis inducing prayer. And the Mishnah Berurah says you can say that on Shabbat because essentially it's about your spiritual failings. You can't ask for your physical needs on Shabbat, but you can ask for spiritual needs on Shabbat. Similarly, the Mishnah Berurah says, "V'lakach ra'oi shetitpalel ha'isha achar shetigmor ha'hadlaka v'habracha sheiten la Hakadosh Baruch Hu banim zacharim meirim batorah." Similarly, it's appropriate for a woman after lighting Shabbat candles and making the bracha that God give her, you know, male children who will shine forth Torah. Again, don't want to get into the 21st century mentality of praying only for boys. But if you've ever read, right, that beautiful Yehi Ratzon after candle lighting, right? I forget the name of the guy who made it into a popular song, V'zakeni Lagadel, Bonim Uvne Vonim, Chachamim Unavonim, right? We might want to translate nowadays Bonim Uvne Vonim as children and grandchildren, but it's probably transparently sons and grandsons. But again, Ruth is sure a few weeks ago about women learning Gemara. Maybe we can make it gender neutral nowadays. But the point is, right, you are allowed to ask that your children grow up and not just observe Torah, but teach Torah, right? It's really a prayer to raise generations of rabbinic leadership, Torah teachers, right? How can you ask for such a prayer on Shabbat? Well, because it's not really a personal request, it's a spiritual request, right? You're asking that your children not just be observant, but are kind of models of observance and teachers of observance for others. It might sound like a personal request, but the Mishnah Berurah's point is it's really a spiritual request. And the final example of this comes from Halichot Shlomo, which, by the way, is like a really like kind of clever pun because it's the ways of Shlomo, but also the halachot, the laws. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, 20th century Israel, the great halachic figure of Ashkenazi Jewry in 20th century Israel. So it's a collection of kind of all of his practices and opinions and yada, yada, yada. And it says here, mutar lechatchila. It is completely, absolutely permitted from the beginning, from the outset. Lomar b'shabbat tfilat Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. The prayer of Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana shekodem halimud, before one learns, ki bakasha al inyanim ruchaniyim, for making requests for spiritual matters, eina bichlal bakashat tzrachim b'shabbat, for requesting spiritual needs, is not included within the prohibition of making requests on Shabbat. The prayer of Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana, by the way, if you kind of open any Gemara, it's always printed right there, and it's basically a prayer like, let me not make mistakes in learning. Let me not say what's prohibited is permitted, permitted is prohibited. Let me not declare the pure impure and the impure pure. Let no one mock me for making mistakes. And the first time I truly appreciated the prayer of Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana was, I think, one of my first days here in town, and I had to do a funeral of someone. It was kind of not a BIV member per se, but I was doing the funeral anyway. And there were several Kohanim who wanted to go to the funeral in the cemetery. And I'm like, I've never been to the cemetery where this is taking place. And now I'm supposed to lead Kohanim to witness a burial and all of the associated challenges that arise from that. And that was when I understood, you know, Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana's prayer, let me not declare the Tamei Tahor and the Tahor Tamei. Let me not accidentally think, oh, this is good. This is perfectly reasonable for Kohanim to walk down. This is Tahor. This is ritually pure. And I've accidentally, you know, actually led them all down a Tamei path. That was when I truly came to appreciate the prayer of Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana when the stakes were genuinely high. But the point here is, that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach makes explicit, and the Mishnah Berurah is kind of very much hinting at, is when we prohibit requests on Shabbat. That refers to physical needs. I'd really like a new car. In theory, I can daven for that during the week. All right? I'm perfectly allowed to do that. I can ask God to do that. I can ask God for parnassah, I can ask God for health, I can ask God for all of these various spiritual matters, for all of these various physical matters, right? And this is something Rav Schechter in other contexts stresses, right? You should add your personal needs to the Amidah, however petty they may seem, because it adds a certain personal flavor to your Amidah. That's during the week. On Shabbat, Shabbat is not the time to ask for a new car. Shabbat is not the time to ask for some of these more mundane matters. Again, there are, I should stress, for people who are wondering, right, there are other positions which point out, for example, if you are obviously consumed by a loved one, a friend, family member who is in ill health, davening for their health even on Shabbat, right, you can't say the bracha of Rafa'inu, but davening for their health on Shabbat is not actually a purely physical request, and it's not trying to forget about it is not going to help. But the broad point nonetheless stands, which is that Shabbat is supposed to be reserved for spiritual matters. And indeed, when we reflect on the one bracha we make every single Amidah, the bracha of Mekadesh HaShabbat, it's entirely about spiritual matters. Elokeinu ve'elokei avoteinu, ritzevim nuchateinu, may you find favor in our rest, kadashenu b'mitzvotecha, sanctify us with your commandments, v'tein chelkeinu b'toratecha, right? Wait, we want to do your mitzvot, and we want a share in your Torah, sabe'enu mituvecha. By the way, if you're looking at the Hebrew, Sefari has this weird bug on its Nusach Ashkenaz Siddur, where it drops all of like the cholams and the all of the kind of the diacritics that go above the line, it's dropping all of them, which is why it looks really, really weird. But that word is sabi'inu mituvecha v'samchein b'shuatecha, right? Satisfy us with your goodness, grant us joy in your salvation, v'taher libeinu li'avdecha be'emet, and just purify our hearts to serve you in truth, right? Is there any more spiritually succinct prayer than just that one, those four words, v'taher libeinu li'avdecha be'emet, purify our hearts to serve you in truth, right? It is the most pure spiritual request you could find. I just want to serve you, God. Help me. Right? You know, and then we just kind of switch slightly more into kind of more standard bracha themes. But the point is, right, on Shabbat, the Amidah, we drop all of the weekday personal requests and we switch it for spiritual needs. There are no more sources, but I just have a little bit more to say, which is the following. If that is true of Shabbat, how much more so must that be true of Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat? Right? We turn to the Ribono Shel Olam on the first day of the year. The recognition of our failures of the past year. I always say kind of the same statement, and it's because I think it kind of captures succinctly what I think is Rosh Hashanah, right? All of the distance between the people we wish we were and the people we are, and we kind of confront on Rosh Hashanah the gap between what we want. And you know what? While I would not say it's anyone's priority, I don't think it's crazy on a Sunday of Rosh Hashanah to think about some of the more mundane hopes for the next year. Again, if new car, right? But like, if you want Parnassah, right? Rosh Hashanah is a perfect time to kind of ask God for, not kind of arrogantly, like, give me more money, I'm a saint. But like, this is something I would really, really like, you know, need, right? That's not crazy to ask on Rosh Hashanah. To reflect on, and I always encourage people to do this, right? Don't just reflect on being a better Jew, as important as that obviously is, but reflect on just the general need to be better, right? Maybe you don't wash the dishes as much as you should. Definitely not a problem I ever have in this household. Fortunately, I am a saint, as Ruthie would attest, but unfortunately she's muted, so she can't actually comment. But the point is, right, maybe Rosh Hashanah is a time to think about some of our more mundane goals for the year. But that's not the case when Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbat. Because Rosh Hashanah and Shabbat prohibits personal requests so much that it prohibits the chauffeur from being sounded. Because the chauffeur is that purest form of prayer, tsa'aka, outcry. It's our primal need, our primal pain. All of those, and I don't want to use the term mundane for that, but all of those ultimate kind of feelings inside, that's what the chauffeur carries. But on Shabbat, we're not allowed to do that. We ban the chauffeur from the sanctuary. We don't entertain for even a second hearing its sound, because it's to teach us, remind us, to jar us into recognizing what our priority needs to be on Shabbat Rosh Hashanah. And that is to be totally consumed by our spiritual lives, our spiritual health, and our desire to change things. And so I don't want to suggest a complete kind of binary distinction between Rosh Hashanah day one and Rosh Hashanah day two this year, right? I don't want to kind of encourage you to be like, make day two totally mundane and make day one all about spiritual matters. But to a certain extent, Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat this year really, really, you know, heightens our focus for what we should be thinking about. On the first day of Rosh Hashanah, we are forbidden from making personal requests. We are forbidden from asking about those mundane things in our lives. All we can do, all we must do, is focus on our spiritual lives, being better Jews, forging a better relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. And by being forced to do that, we're actually forced to reckon with, how could we be better? What could we do to have a better relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, to be fromer, to be just better Jews, right? We don't worry about being better people, as important as that is on day one of Rosh Hashanah, because that's kind of a personal request thing. Our sole focus is Torah learning, mitzvot, relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. That's three different things. And I said sole focus, but it's three different expressions of the same thing. That is our focus on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And the shofar is prohibited on that day to reinforce as clearly as possible how much our primal requests, fears, and concerns are barred from the first day of Rosh Hashanah, to urge us, to implore us, to insist that we spend the day devoted instead to our spiritual endeavors and our spiritual requests, so that when it comes to the second day, having focused maybe on what should be our priority, we've already devoted one day to that and can then turn to all our other needs on the second day of Rosh Hashanah.